Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning. Hola, buenos dias, bonjour, como esta va? Guten Morgen, ni hao, hello. Hey guys, hello to everybody, wherever you are in the world. This is the Jaira Nicole Show every Tuesdays from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Central Time. I'm so excited that we are back for another episode of the show, and I'm so excited, as always, to have you guys here to join me. We have a really, really, really great show coming up for you guys. I have three fantastic guests. I have Ms. Jamie Parker, who's going to be joining us from the Rufus and Buddy Show. I also have Ms. Tisa Leggett, who is currently running for Fort Worth City Council for District 6. And then finally, I have Ms. Hannah Bacon, who is currently walking from the Pacific Coast to the Atlantic Coast for climate change. So you guys definitely don't want to miss this. I'm just super excited. Like I said, as always, each show gets better and better. And I hope that you guys find this show entertaining. And as always, please comment if there's a question that you have, if you want to be on camera, if you have a question for one of our guests, please let me know in the comments. I love, love, love to hear from you guys. So I'm super excited for this show. I keep saying that because it's just, I'm just so happy. So let's just first catch up. How have you guys been? How was your weekend? Daylight savings time. Yay, yay, yay. So instead of it being dark over here in Texas, it looks like it's staying much brighter, much lighter in the night. So that's a good thing. And even though it's only been a few days since Saturday, well, since Sunday, technically, since that's what it was, it just seems like the day is still going by super, super fast. Does anybody else feel like that? Like, daylight savings time just happened, but it already feels like, okay, the day is going by super fast. So, and then we got spring coming up soon in a couple weeks. And then tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day. So does anybody actually celebrate St. Patrick's Day? I know most, I'll say for the millennials and younger ones, a lot of people go to Dallas or somewhere, you know, in downtown Fort Worth, and they order like green beer and dress up in all green and do different fun things like that. It sucks because since COVID happened, I haven't been able to really celebrate St. Patrick's Day in what, like 2 years? Yeah, because last year I didn't do anything. So normally I go to Dallas, uptown Dallas, and go out with friends and try the green beer and dress up and attend the parade, but there's none of that this year. I'm still trying to be safe. So are you guys still wearing your mask, Texans? How are we holding up? Are we still wearing our mask? Governor Greg Abbott says we don't have to, but what are you doing? Let me know in the comments. Are you wearing your mask still? Are you just kind of like, woo, thank God that's over with. I don't have to worry about it. And how many of you have gotten your vaccine? I see a lot of people online posting pictures and videos. I know my mom posted a video on Facebook of her getting the vaccine, and everyone's commenting, I'm getting mine tomorrow, I'm getting mine the next week, and so on and so forth. So have any of you guys gotten your vaccine? And for those of you who
don't want to get it or just still kind of reserved or hesitant about it, why? Let me know in the comments. I want to hear from you guys. So I also want to share with you guys, I don't know how many of you are familiar with, I guess I'll say for the younger ones, Jerry Lewis, but he is my favorite comedian ever, and he is, today is his birthday, so I did want to go ahead and share my screen and share this funny clip with you guys of Jerry and his movie, The Nutty Professor. So give me 1 second to share that with you guys, because this scene is so funny. My dad and I always watch it all the time. It's always so fun to just watch old clips like that. Like I said, I'm a huge Jerry Lewis fan, so just wanted to start off the show with something lighthearted. So you guys, we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we will be right back with our first guest, Ms. Jamie Parker. Stay tuned. Again, this is the Gyra Nicole Show from every Tuesday from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Central Time. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we're going to go to commercial and be right back. Uh-oh. Is it for... This did this last time. 1 second. Looks like it's struggling. So that's okay. This happens, technical difficulty. So we're going to go ahead and get ready to bring on the first guest. All righty. Let me go ahead and ask Miss Jamie Harmon Parker to the screen. Hello, Jamie. How are you?
Hello. How are you?
I am great. Sorry about that. I tried to get a little break to bring you on, but technology sometimes.
That's okay. I am so excited and happy to be here. Thank you.
I'm super excited to have you on the show. I just wanted to give viewers a little bit of a background how I found you. So I was, you know, I'm always, the whole show is just looking for everyday people like you and I, people who are doing amazing things, trying to make a difference and change the world. And I actually came across Miss Jamie via Instagram. And so I read up on the Rufus and Buddy show, and I loved what you were doing, and I found it so inspiring. So of course I asked you to be on the show, and so I'm super happy to have you here, and I'll go ahead and let you introduce yourself to everyone and tell us a bit about you and the Rufus and Buddy show.
Well, again, thank you. And I'm so excited to be here, and I feel quite privileged. You have some very interesting guests coming on today. So I'm glad that I'm coming before them. But again, my name is Jamie Harmon Parker, and I am from Columbia, North Carolina. I am a recent grad of Capella University. I hold a master's in human services. And so the Rufus and Buddy Show is all about encouraging preschoolers. That's my target age group. It's all about encouraging preschoolers in good citizenship. So the goal is to do it in a fun way. We want to teach preschoolers about having compassion for their fellow classmates, honesty, integrity, those types of things. And so that is the that's the vision and the goal of the Rufus and Buddy Show.
Right. I love that, especially I love it because it's unique. There's so many different ways to reach children, right? And and entertain them, but also encourage them to learn something. And I loved what you did, what you said about encouraging and inspiring kids to be good citizens. So how did you essentially decide that you wanted to encourage them through puppetry? What brought you to puppetry? Is it something you've been doing since you were younger, or somebody introduced it to you? What's the story behind that?
So it actually started in church. I was a Sunday school teacher, and I was responsible for the little ones ages 3 to 5. So I was trying to come up with a unique way to reach the children, a way in which I can teach them on their level.
Right.
It will also be, fun at the same time, encouraging and on their level. So I started out in Sunday school. I brought out the puppets one day and just started working with the children that way. And it took out very well. As a matter of fact, the children wanted to come to Sunday school more often. They were even going out and inviting their friends to church. And so it was a hit in Sunday school. So that's where the spirit of the puppetry began, in church, in Sunday school.
I love that. And so the whole premise of teaching them to be a good citizen, can you kind of walk us through the process of what that looks like, how you inspire and encourage children to be good citizens through the Rufus and Buddy Show, if you can kind of paint us a picture of that.
So every show has a theme. And so each, the theme be based on honesty. If it's based on honesty, then I write a skit centered around that. And then through that, a story is told. And so through that story that's being told, then I encourage kids and inspire them that way through the story. And then at the end of every show, kids have the opportunity to play a game. And so the game is also reinforces what's being told in that story that's a part of the show.
Right. I love that. And I bet, like you said, kids respond to it and they're inclined to learn. And like you said, now you have the children going out and saying, come to my church. We get to learn, how to be good citizens, or we get to learn about honesty, or I learned about, telling the truth, just different things like that. I think that's fantastic and great. So now that you've been doing this for a while, how has it changed your perspective of essentially just world, everyday life, and just children's education in general?
So I guess in children's education, I'm also a substitute teacher.
Right.
So being a part of the public school arena, so inside the schools, they're always coming up with different innovative ways to inspire, to encourage, and teach children.
Absolutely.
So being a substitute teacher, that has encouraged and inspired me into coming up with, different ways in order to reach children.
Right.
I'm sorry, what was your other question? I'm sorry.
No, you're totally fine. I was just saying, how has it changed your perspective?
Okay. So I can say that it's mostly encouraged me to stay on task, to keep at it, because I see the value of it more and more. The more I do it, the more value I see in it, and the more I can see how it is reaching the children and how it's making an impact. So it's encouraged me and inspired me to just keep going at it, to make it grow larger than what it is. My hope is to one day maybe be an actual part of the public school education system where I can come in on a regular basis, you know, doing Good Citizenship Week or something, you know, and present a performance for the children.
Right. So I'm just a little bit more curious about what led you to be, you know, a substitute teacher and in education. I know you said you started off with the Rufus and Buddy show doing it at church, but growing up, was it something you always knew you were going to do? You were going to be in education, you were going to be a substitute teacher, or what kind of led you, any significant life moment that led you to doing that?
I never thought I would be a substitute teacher. So that's sort of like happened along the way.
Okay.
My past includes me, well, I worked with a local university for over 10 years in which I was worked on a research project. And so that project involved me going into schools, interviewing teachers who had students that were a part of the research project. And so by me going into the schools and just being a part of that program, that sort of gave me some kind of, a small foundation on, you know, piquing my curiosity about, you know, school. But the program that I worked with, we were tracking children that were in kindergarten. That was part of a conflict management program.
Mm.
So we're trying to see how early intervention, how that affected children's life, whether or not, you know, that early intervention stuck with them from elementary school all the way through high school. And so later on in life, after being a part of several research programs, then I decided that I would try substitute teaching while I was getting my education. So it worked good with trying to go to school.
Right.
Yeah, so the hours worked well with that.
I bet. So now that you've kind of had this, you know, this more narrow, I almost said broad, but this more narrow spectrum of exactly what it is, you know, the direction you want to go, how would you narrow down what you believe your purpose is now with the Rufus and Buddy show and just as a woman in general, you know, who's trying to educate children through the art of puppetry? What would you narrow down your purpose to?
So I guess, how would I narrow down my purpose? I guess I would say that my purpose is to reinforce those attributes that parents are reinforcing in their children, that reinforcing their children already. I like to say I want to be a part of that village that says, train a child in the way that they should go.
Right.
And like, that's my purpose in life, and that's my purpose with the Rufus and Buddy show. Just be a part of that community.
What role does your spirituality play in what you're doing?
Well, my spirituality plays a role in who I am, so it plays a role in everything that I do in life. And so I do nothing outside of that.
Mm.
So I try to, in that being, then I make sure that those same attributes of being a good citizen that I stress to children, those are part of my life as well.
Right, absolutely. What would you say to maybe those who are like, critics who might be like, puppetry, maybe it's outdated. Is that really an effective way to, you know, inspire, encourage children to learn? What would you say to those parents or just people in general who may be critics of saying, there's more, you know, there's better ways to reach children than puppetry?
So I will say that I don't feel like there's better ways. I think there are different ways to do different things, and that I don't feel like puppetry is outdated. I feel like it's coming back, and even if it's not coming back, I'm bringing it back. Buddy, we're going to bring it back. I don't feel like it's outdated, and puppetry has a lot of value to it. One of the things that I wanted to mention that part anyway,
right.
That puppetry is very, puppetry can help in the development of positive social and emotional development. Mm-hmm. So those things are very important in those younger years of raising our children.
Mm-hmm. So for you, in terms of like coming up with Rufus and Buddy and the name, what's the story essentially behind them? Are they buddies? Are they pals?
Your best pal. So this is Rufus and this is Buddy. So they are best pals. And the thing of it is that Rufus is always encouraging Buddy and telling him a story about good citizenship.
And so is Buddy kind of like, does he go on these little adventures or real life kind of scenarios where he's faced with different things to kind of help him learn exactly how to be honest, or like you said, how to be a good citizen and so on and so forth?
Exactly.
It's so adorable, and I just can only imagine, because I'm trying to think back to my, just a bracket, but I'm trying to think back to my childhood, and I'm like, I don't remember, you know, going to a puppet show or really, but I mean, besides the Muppets, I guess you'd say, you know, a TV show like that, mm-hmm. but I was like, I don't remember seeing a real live, you know, puppet show, and I can only imagine how entertaining and fun that would be for kids. Tell me a little bit more about the challenges, because I know with COVID, you probably had to slow down, right, on doing your live shows, or I don't know if that affected the Sunday school lessons that you said at church, but paint me a picture of kind of the struggles and challenges you endured with that.
Well, it has been challenging because the Rufus and Buddy show actually launched during COVID.
Oh, wow.
And so my whole curriculum of going out into the schools and being able to present the show that way, you know, everything had closed down. Wow. But it was a good thing because initially when I started out, we were going to be a traveling mostly show.
Right.
But because of COVID, then it encouraged me to do virtual shows more.
Mm.
And so now I've added the virtual shows, and kids can watch the shows, and we even play games, like I said, during the virtual shows. They're able to win prizes still during the virtual shows. So it was a bit challenging, but I think what it did is that it encouraged me to think differently and look at different ways of presenting the show.
Mm. So let us inform us about the process. So if somebody who's watching right now and maybe they've got a child whose birthday, you know, is coming up and they wanted to do a virtual live, how do they get in contact with you? Where can they go? What's the process?
So they would contact me through my website, which is JamieSpokenWord.com. So Rufus and Buddy Show is a part of Jamie's Spoken Word. So it's Jamie's Spoken Word doing business as the Rufus and Buddy Show. So they would contact me through that website. Let me know if they're going to have a birthday party, then they can go to the site and put in all the information in reference to the amount of children that they're going to have and that those types of things. But if you want to have a birthday party, then you just sign up, and I just, we pick a date. At the theme, I try to stick to the same theme. I try to keep everything within being a good citizen. So I don't alter the theme. Even if it's a birthday party, it'll be fun, but it'll still be centered around good citizenship. So every skit that I write, although for a party, for a church, for school, it would still be centered around good citizenship.
Mm.
So be it virtual or in person, every show is followed by a game. All the games are made for children, centered around children that are pre-K. So everything is pre-K friendly. The games are... The shows are, as well as the prizes are. So any prizes that they would receive are centered around that age group as well.
Oh, that's awesome. So in terms of 5-10 years from now, what are some of your hopes and visions for the Rufus and Buddy show? Where do you see yourself in the future with this? What are your hopes, at least?
Well, my hopes are that 5 or 10 years from now that we would have grown, we're more popular, that we can become a common theme among our local public schools, in which we can go out doing good citizen programs for the children there. So I want to be, the schools and the daycares are very important to me. And so those are the, it's very important that we're able to go out and reach those venues. So I would like to be just a local name among the schools to freely come in and present a presentation.
Right. So for people who may be asking, okay, this sounds great, but maybe there's someone else out there who's doing something, you know, a little bit similar to what you're doing. What would you say? What would you say in terms of what separates the Rufus and Buddy show, maybe from other, you know, puppet shows? What makes you guys so unique?
Well, I think our uniqueness is in the fact that we do live and we also offer virtual, so we're very flexible in that. Mm-hmm. Our uniqueness also is that we stick to that area of good citizenship.
Mm.
You're not going to come out with something different every time we come out.
Right.
We're coming out presenting that one major theme to help to encourage children. And I feel like by encouraging our children, then that also inspires our parents. That helps to reinforce those things that the parents are trying to teach our children. And, yeah, there may be other puppet shows, but there's still no other Rufus and Buddy out there, and there's no other Miss Jamie out there.
No, absolutely right. And I know I read on your website that you're very, very passionate and very big on words in general, what people say and how they carry themselves and words that they live by. Can you share a little bit more about what words specifically mean to you and the role that plays in you inspiring children to be good citizens?
Well, because, yeah, I do believe that words are very powerful. Words can lift you up and words can bring you down. And so in encouraging children to be good citizens, if they would be cognizant of that, if we could remind them of that, of how powerful the words are, then I feel like that encourages, that will help them to be able to be better citizens when they grow up, that they'll be able to be better able to, you know, support constructively to their community.
Right, absolutely. I think community is very key. And like you said, for these children here, you know, we live in a time where we have 9-year-olds, 10-year-olds, sometimes even younger, a little bit older, you know, committing suicide and taking their life just based off of, you know, different words that people have said, or just because they go to school and they find themselves getting bullied. And, you know, people can say, oh, well, I was just upset when I said this, or, you know, it's just words, or kids are mean, right? That's one of the things that I know I hear a lot of the times. You know, children might come home from school crying about, you know, so and you know, Tommy or Timmy said this to me in school, Mommy, it made me upset. They're crying, and parents sometimes tend to blow it off and just say, oh, you know, ignore Timmy or ignore Tommy. You know, those are just words, or, you know, be tough. You know where I'm going with this, things like mm-hmm. that. And yet children, it really can scar them for life and really hurt, you know, really hurt them. And so that's why I really love that you guys focus on being good citizens, because through this puppet show, it really encourages and motivates people to develop such good character. And like you said, I think it's not only just something that preschoolers can learn from. I think it can also inspire parents as well to really be careful the things they say, because sometimes I think even parents, the way they talk to their children, right? You have some people who say, you know, my mom cursing me out was something that I grew up with, right? It's not a big deal. But I can only imagine if you have a preschooler who's like, Mommy, that's, you know, maybe after, you know, going to one of your shows, Mommy, that's not nice. You shouldn't say that. Remember, we're supposed to be good citizens. it's something that parents can even learn from. So throughout this journey, what would you say has been your biggest reward through this all? Or if you have any personal stories that you want to share with one of the shows you did where a kid was really touched or maybe a parent was touched, I'd love to hear that.
So this centers around what you just said, because I had a couple of virtual shows where I had the same young man at both shows. He's like four years old. So one of the shows, as a matter of fact, their most recent show, it was Valentine's Day. So in Valentine's Day, in our Valentine's Day show, Buddy said that Valentine's Day is just for girls. So he said Valentine's Day is not cool and it's only for girls. So my little fellow that was watching the show, he turned around and he told his mother, he said, I'm not watching this anymore because that's not right. That's not right for him to say that Valentine's Day is only for girls. So he said, I'm not watching it anymore. He's only 4 years old. And so that really touched me. So his parents, and he walked away, and his parents had to bring him back into the room and had him to finish watching his show. And so he saw that Buddy had changed his mind, and he found that the Valentine's Day is a day in which, you know, we all express our love and caring for everyone. So it's not a day just for girls, but it's a day for everyone.
Right.
So that really touched me to think that he'd been watching, this was the second time watching one of my shows, and so he learned something from that. So that really touched me. So to know that if I do 2,000 shows and only reach two children, it would be worth it.
Right. Absolutely. No, absolutely. I agree 100%. And like you said, those are the stories that I, and memories that I feel like you keep close to your heart. And you share, and then with other people, like you're doing now, you can share and say, hey, there was this such, or I imagine when he gets older, you know, I remember when you were 4 years old, you know, you said this, and then you watched the show, and, you know, so on and so forth. So I think that's incredible and great. And I know, of course, as you are a mother, and I read a grandmother as well, are your granddaughters huge fans? Do they get kind of unlimited free Rufus and Buddy?
Yes.
I know that probably makes them super happy to be able to do that. And so as a mother, and, you know, as just a parent and grandparent in general, how do you bring that to your shows as well?
So I guess as a mother, of course, it makes me what word am I looking for? It makes me make sure that I stay focused in what it is that I'm doing and make sure that everything is well put together. Because as a mother, when I'm teaching my children something or giving my children instruction in something, I want to make sure that what I'm doing is correct.
Right.
So I make sure that everything is done the correct way. I guess make sure that all the research, I do research on what it is that have I written before I present it to make sure that everything is politically correct and that all the instruction makes sense, you know, makes logical, educational sense, and that it can be used instructively, you know, by someone else. So that's important to me because in raising my children, when I teach them things, I want to teach them the right things in life. And so I don't want to be instructing children the wrong way.
Right.
You know, good intentions, but still instructing them the wrong way.
Right.
So it's very important to me that I'm giving, you know, the right kinds of instruction.
Right. No, absolutely. I agree 100%. So whenever you, you know, kind of get an idea in your head and write it down, how long does it generally take you to kind of write the script and lay out, you know, formulate your show?
Well, I'm a writer at heart. So once I get an idea in my mind, it doesn't take very long for me to actually write it.
Mm.
Once that idea pops into my mind, I can write a script in 30 minutes or you know, less.
Right.
You know. So Yeah, it doesn't take very long for me to actually write it.
Wow. So what continues going forward? What continues to inspire you? What continues to be your motivation?
So my motivation is children just like that four-year-old who learned something. So children are my inspiration. They are my motivation. The world as it is a big motivator for me, right? Because I feel like, you know, as adults, we can do better.
Mm.
And I feel like if we would all, you know, take the time to try to be a part of that village to encourage all of our children,
mm,
to inspire them, to train them up in the way that they should go, then I feel like it'll be a better future for our children.
Mm.
So I feel like what I'm doing now will, my hope is that it'll put a dent and some of the diversity and cultural things that are going on now, so that, you know, we train them up in the right way, then they'll be as one.
Right.
So, and with the Rufus and Buddy show, we have a diverse group of puppets. I call them my little children. So we have a diverse group of children in the Rufus and Buddy show. So it's not just Rufus and Buddy, but they have lots of friends that come out from time to time. And so the friends have different faces as well. So we look just like the world out there looks. So.
I know. I love that. I think that's very key. So in terms of being a good citizen, going off with what you just said, do you guys try to, because I know they're still preschoolers, but in terms of maybe the social issues that are going on, do you try to address any of those? Or have you tried in the past with certain shows, maybe such as, you know, racism or, you know, kind of racy and controversial topics? Do you try to address those in the show, or since they're still preschoolers, you kind of, you know, hold off on those topics? I'm just curious.
Well, since they are preschoolers, I've been somewhat holding back, holding off a little on those topics. So I'm trying to kind of like a, get a little feel for, you know, how to go with that.
Right.
So I feel like, because I know I am a substitute teacher.
Right.
But I like to do research. So I feel like I would like to, you know, meet with a couple of educators and see how, you know, whether or not the preschoolers are actually, you know, ready for that.
Right. Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. Any final thoughts or things that you'd like to share with us?
Again, I want to say thank you. And I would, I can't think of any final thoughts other than I would like for people to go to my website and check out what it is that we have to offer at the Rufus and Buddy show. And that's all I think that I would have to say. I guess, you know, I'm still a little nervous.
Yeah, no, you're fine. You're fine. I just really appreciate you coming on the show. And like she said, you guys, I included all of her information down there at the bottom. So again, if you guys are interested in doing, you know, scheduling a virtual show or just have some more questions or maybe even want to learn more about the art of puppetry, please, I'm sure Miss Jamie would not mind if you guys reached out to her and asked her any questions. So you can follow her, like their Facebook page, and you can follow her on Instagram. And like I said, Miss Jamie, it's such a pleasure to have you on the show. And I'd love to have you back on the show again. And we will be keeping up with all of the great things that the Rufus and Buddy show is doing. And please, if you ever come to Texas, we'd love to have you do a show here at, in a community or school here in Texas. So if you guys are going to be traveling, hopefully with all this, you know, COVID, once things die down. But thank you again so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure to have you on and a pleasure meeting you virtually as well.
Thank you. And the same to you. And hey, I might take you up on that visit to Texas. I have a daughter that's moving to Texas.
Oh, do you? What part? I'm in Dallas. Is she moving to Dallas?
She'll be in Houston. Her husband is in the military.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Well, I do go to Houston sometimes. So maybe we can connect on that. That'd be great. Well, thank you so much again, and you have a great week, and we will be talking and connecting very soon.
You are welcome. Thank you.
Bye. Alrighty, you guys, so we are moving right along in the show. Like I said, this is the Jaira Nicole Show every Tuesday from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Central Time. I just concluded the first interview with our first guest, Miss Jamie Parker, who is the owner and operator of the Rufus and Buddy Show. Again, I still have her information there down on the screen for those of you who might have just tuned in. If you missed it, don't worry. We'll have this posted so you can watch it and you can learn more about her with her information on the ground. I'm going to go ahead and we're going to try to take another little break and show you guys our Red Cross, March is Red Cross Month, so show you this Red Cross Month, little ad in. Hopefully the technology is actually...
Make giving a part of your New Year's resolution. Save a...
Nope. Uh-oh. Alrighty, you guys, it looks like the commercials don't want to, it looks like they don't want to work today for some reason. This happened last time, let me try. Alrighty, guys, and we are back. This is the Jaira Nicole Show every Tuesdays from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Central Time. I want to go ahead and say hello to those of you who tuned in. I just now saw your comments. I want to say hello and good morning to my cousin Kim. Good morning to Andrew. Good morning to Isis. Good morning to my cousin Teresa. And good morning to Marva as well. Thank you guys for tuning in today and commenting as always. I do just want to say again, for those of you who are tuning in, if you have any question for our guests or interested in joining and being a part of the show, please comment. I always love and enjoy hearing from you guys, and I'm so grateful to continue to do this show. Again, those of you may have noticed recently, since I switched the show from DFW News and Things to the Jaira Nicole Show, I really wanted to change the focus of my show. And so what I wanted this show to be about is just basically people, everyday people like you and I who have extraordinary and amazing stories. I want this show to be a platform for you guys to come on and share your story. A lot of the times in the media, you know, unless it's a big issue, you know, these types of things and stories won't get covered, but this is what I want my show to be, that platform, because again, I am seeing so many amazing people, meeting people through connections, finding people on social media who all have these incredible, inspiring stories that they're doing and telling and just, you know, trying to make the world a better place and make a difference. And so I am super excited to continue to do this show and have this platform. And so we're going to try to take another quick 30-second break, and then I'm going to be right back on with my second guest for today, Ms. Tisa Leggett, and I'm super excited to have her on. She is running for Fort Worth City Council, District 6. So we're going to take a quick break, and then I will add her to the stream, and we will be right back. So stay tuned for that. You guys, and we are back. So let me go ahead and get ready to add her onto the stream. Let's see. Hi, Tisa, how How are you?
Hello. I'm doing well. How are you?
I am great. It's so great to have you on this show. I'm super excited. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to come on the show.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So I want to go ahead and start off by letting you introduce yourself to everyone, and then we'll dive right into the conversation from there.
Absolutely. My name is Tisa Leggett, and I am running for Fort Worth City Council District 6. I was born in Fort Worth, actually, at Carswell Air Force Base, and was raised between Fort Worth, Texas, and San Antonio, Texas. But I went to elementary school out in Fort Worth, just the same. That's typically a question people ask me. Where did you go to school? Where did you go to high school, right? So just to give it some placement here,
right.
I went to Our Mother of Mercy, a Catholic school. and then went on to college at the University of North Texas, which we cleaned up at the Grammys, everyone. That was super exciting to see. University of North Texas, and then in journalism, not music, sadly enough. And then I went on to become a journalist. So I worked for MPC5 and other smaller stations across the state and realized that I really had a passion for public policy.
Mm. Oh, we lost your audio for a second.
Can you hear me right now?
Yes, now I can.
That better? Perfect.
Yes, that's
okay.
Better.
Went on to working for Women's Healthcare after working for Chesapeake, and then to Blue Zones Project, where I spent 5 years creating policy to make healthy choices easier for the residents in Fort Worth.
Yeah.
And so definitely was a great experience for me. I worked very closely with Independent School District, Fort Worth ISD, Crowley ISD as well, to ensure that children had access to healthier food options now. I'm very popular with the Eagle Mountain Saginaw ISD and Fort Worth ISD because we were able to help create initiatives to increase their recess time.
Mm.
So that was super, super exciting. For us. Oh, I am so sorry. If you can hear that, we have a housekeeper here. Helps with my grandparents. So if you hear some background, it'll stop here in just a bit. Sorry about that.
You are totally fine. Wow. First of all, you have certainly been busy.
You know, absolutely. And so here's the thing is that as I have tried to continue my career, you know, at the end of Blue Zones Project, I ended up going back to the public sector at Sodexo. And so after Sodexo was completed, my time there, then I was able to work for the region as a public advocacy, government relations advocate for the region of Dallas and Fort Worth.
Wow.
To create policies to make our region look more attractive. And the reason why I went into local politics is because, more localized advocacy is because I am from Fort Worth.
Mm.
And I think that there are some things at the level of the city that we need to take care of because it does affect the region and our state in ways that we can only imagine. But I look forward to hearing some more of those questions, and I can tell you a bit more why.
Right, yes. No problem. So let's start off with the beginning. Can you just tell us a little bit, because those who may be watching, I find a lot of times when it comes to local elections, a lot of people don't know even the basics, right? They don't really participate in them. And I feel like a lot of it is people just don't know where to start. They don't know where to get information. They don't know who's simply running for city council. They don't participate and pay any attention to things like that. So my question for you is, can you tell us a little bit about, first question at least, can you tell us a little bit about when the election is, what they need to do, and then the second part would be your answer for why people should start, you know, participating in local elections and why they're so important.
Sure. So the first thing is that local elections are the most important, and I have to be really honest with you, and I'm going to be very localized and loose to make sure you all can hear me. That's how important this is.
Right.
I'm gonna move around here. Okay. So what happens is that a lot of the attention is for state and federal government, and a lot of the money for fundraising purposes for politics are at those levels. It is extremely disappointing to me as I'm running for office to see that when I know for sure and for certain
that local is the most important. I'll go into detail as to why.
Okay.
So think about the trash that's picked up. If you think about ordinances, when you talk about even possession of paraphernalia, marijuana that's legalized in other states, or the law for it may be more lenient in other parts of the metroplex, specifically Dallas. Let's say we have a friend from Dallas who partakes, and then they come over to Fort Worth. Well, if our ordinance, our laws are stricter, that individual could get in a lot more trouble here than they were 30 minutes away. That's on a municipal level. People don't know that. That's municipal level as well. We talk about evictions. I was under the impression that a lot of the evictions were under the justice of the peace. A lot of times departments, when you get, you know, if you haven't been paying, you know,
right.
go up on hard times. It happens to the best of us,
right.
Especially during a COVID season. Or pandemic, you know, like we're in that this is not a season. This is gonna be with us for a while.
Right.
We're gonna have to get used to this, right?
Right.
I hope it is a season. I keep calling it that. I'm like, oh, I'm ready to get out of this. That's the point. That's the season stay. So for this period of time, a lot of folks lost their jobs.
Right.
And we know that. So we know they lost their jobs. PPP wasn't coming as fast as it could, right? The payment protection funding from the federal government. We had officials who were not giving the American people the amount of money that it took for them to survive. So evictions, let's go back local, I promise, it all goes together, right?
Right.
So let's say you didn't get your stimulus money, right? Or you did not get your unemployment money because you tried to apply with the Texas Workforce Commission and you didn't hear back and you're under a hard time.
Right.
Right? You get evicted. That also, the city could have paused it. The city could do that. The municipalities could help pause those evictions because we're under a state of emergency.
Right.
And other reasons why. So that's something they could step in and help with. And in Fort Worth, they chose not to. And I immediately said, I've had enough. I've had enough of the lack of compassion for our fellow residents. That could have easily been any of us.
Right.
Another aspect of local government that we don't think about a lot of times, maybe we just don't know how to advocate for ourselves, is when we talk about community policing. Community, you know, and District 6 specifically is where the Jackson Craig incident happened. That was when a woman called the police and unfortunately, her support because her son has been touched by a neighbor inappropriately. She walked on grass or something like that. When she called the police, she's the one that ended up on the ground. And it made national headlines. That happened in my district. And so I talked to Anna Jefferson, the death of a young woman who was playing video games with her nephew and was shot through a window in her home by a police officer. Now, what I would say is that I think our city is moving in a better direction. I'm very happy to see that. But there's a way that we need to show our constituents and residents that we're listening and that we're putting compassionate measurements in place. I'm not saying they're not doing it.
Right.
What I'm saying is we need to be able to communicate back to taxpayers, back to residents, hey, this is what we're doing to rectify the situation. Not this attitude of, well, we're already doing that. No. Tell us how you're doing it. Tell us what kind of funding you need. The city of Fort Worth, the residents just approved close to $1 billion up into 2030 for police or CCPD funding and for community policing. Now, my idea is this. So with all this talk about defunding police, do not let people do that in Fort Worth. That's distracting. In the sense of having the conversation, the taxpayers have already spoken. It can't go backward off of that. So don't allow anyone to get on your show or anything else. Like, I am not for defunding the police. You can't defund when the taxpayers already funded it. What are you talking about, right? It's so distracting. We're not doing it. We're going to be informed voters. I'm going to tell you about it. This is already done, everybody. Can't defund what's already funded, okay? So here's the thing. So they already have this money. It's already there. What we are asking for now is to have an oversight committee from the citizens, and we want them to tell us how to spend that money.
How to spend it.
Right. Not just the city council. And as elected city councilwoman, I'm in complete agreement with that. It needs to have the people who put me in office, you can also tell us where to put our money. So that's an opinion that I have. I was just talking to some residents on the north side, north and south side, and some folks from LULAC, and they were mentioning to me they'd like to see more soccer fields. I do too. Studies show when young people are involved in extracurricular activity, they're in a more positive environment and less likely to make poor decisions.
Right.
And so, therefore, perhaps with the CCPD funding, we can use that to have more soccer fields, maybe play with our community police and support, and have more community conversation with each other to where everybody knows each other's name. And it's not so much our policing, but it really back to keeping the peace, which is what I'd like to see police, keeping the peace.
Keeping it. Absolutely. So for you as a city council candidate, I know you said you're passionate about public policy and there's so much that comes under that field. So for you, what are your top priorities? When people say, when people are marking that they're going to be voting for you, what are the top priorities that you think, that you know you want to focus on and that people know, okay, I'm putting her, this is what she's going to check off for me off of my list.
Absolutely. So for me specifically, you know, I've got a lot of areas. I'm going to pick my top three.
Sure.
For sure. So digital equity is number one. In District 6, we have a lot of difficulty with broadband access. And so sometimes people think it's the subscription.
Okay.
So do I have internet subscription? That's one type of equity and access. But secondly, just imagine, even on this show right now, if my, you know, audio was going in and out because of lack of broadband or bandwidth, imagine a 14-year-old doing algebra, right? And they're doing their homework. Because of the pandemic, students are forced to do work from home. Now they're back in school, but what if we have to go back home? Imagine having to sit in front of a computer all day and it's not going at the speed we needed to, and parents are at home too,
right?
Over 75 to 80% of folks are at home working from home needing broadband. So it is in our best interest, especially in rural areas, because where my district is, we do touch rural areas. It's not all urban. It's not all city. And so because I represent those folks as well, we want to ensure that they have access, students and families alike. Also, one other important piece is in equity is multimodal transportation. And what that means, I'm not talking just about buses, right, to try to get from one place or to the other. I'm talking about how do you move around the city? Is it shared transportation by car? Or do we have rail or the like? Right? I know for me, I love going to a good basketball game.
Right.
So I enjoy taking the rail to Dallas to watch the basketball game at the American Airlines Center. But I would love it if I could just get to downtown Fort Worth from Crowley. I'd love that. And bypass that traffic on 35. Our friends up north of 35, right before we hit the Keller area, Keller part, that part of Fort Worth, my goodness, it's like, how do you get out of there? 35 is still under construction.
Right.
And how do you get around? So public transportation would be the greatest equalizer, and it would help with economic development. Let me tell you why. For every dollar spent in constructing or investing in public transit, we get $4 back on a return on investment for the community, for the city, and we need that. Also, you know, I was thinking about the fact that my incumbent, you know, we talked about having transportation. At the time, Councilwoman Ann Zeta had brought it up for a half penny tax, and her colleagues didn't show up. And I took note of that. I took note of that. And I said, well, in order for us to move forward, we got to show up.
Right.
Got to show up. Lastly, I would say that the most important piece, again, is to get back to that community service, compassionate community policing. There are some things sometimes you got to, you know, fight crime. I'm not saying be easy on those that are hurting others. I'm not suggesting that.
Right.
What I'm saying is that we have an issue in my district with drag racing versus just throwing these young people into jail. Let's get some partnerships with NASCAR. Let's think outside the box. Let's get them to racing on actual tracks instead of on Risinger, right? Also, I would like to talk through game rooms. We have an interlocal agreement with Tarrant County. The city of Fort Worth does. where we can crack down on those. We had a murder not only two Thursdays ago, at a game room from a burglary. So there's unintended consequences with that. 2 a.m. and it's just not appropriate, especially during the week. It's in close to residential area. We need to put a stop to that. So we can do that through conversation and then obviously with policy.
Right. Absolutely. So I'm curious to know a little bit more about your passion for public policy. When did you realize, because I know you said in the beginning of the interview that you started off in journalism and then you kind of transitioned, to public policy, which is very interesting. So can you kind of walk us through that? What spoke to you in terms of public policy where you said, this is what I want to do, from now on?
That's a great question. It did not happen for me immediately, but I had to understand what it really meant, especially when you're working for public policy for a corporation. Mm. That is a completely different ball game than with, dealing with people or individuals, their day to day. Once I understood what I'm doing for a corporation actually does affect people's day to day, how can I leverage what I know now for good? And if you know anything about me, I am I'm an advocate. My dad was diagnosed with diabetes when I was a kid. As he got older, we had more hospital visits, unfortunately. Mm. And when we go to the hospital, everyone sends me because I am watching the policies of the hospital. Mm. I am looking at what my dad's care is. I have a binder that I keep all this medication. And because he's with the VA, which shout out to the VA, we are grateful for the care. However, they're bombarded.
Mm.
And so in order for us to get him through the system, somebody had to advocate for him.
Mm.
And that was me. And I said, if I can do this for my daddy, I can definitely do it for my neighbor.
Right.
I can do this for anyone. And so I advocate for women's health, for access, for insurance, for anything that we need as working class. Policy is what is instituted. It's supposed to protect us.
Mm.
Right now, you have a group of folks trying to use policy against us, and that's with voting access.
Mm.
I want to use this opportunity of what I've learned along my career to help everybody in the community. We have to understand every time we vote, it matters. Mm-hmm. Every time. In this particular case, you have state representatives, state lawmakers who want to prevent people from voting.
Mm.
Period. We already have low voter turnout. Already. It was only about 6,000 people that determined the District 6 race.
Wow.
Of a city of almost 1 million people. 6,000?
6,000.
In one district, you're looking at between 100,000 people then per district, about. And 6,000 made the decision for the masses. Because people don't understand that the local vote is absolutely popularity.
Right.
And policy is influenced by who votes.
Mm. Mm.
Policy is influenced by who votes, positive or negative.
Right.
And so that's the reason why I have such a passion for it, because I understood you have to be able to read and change laws for equality, for true equality. It has to be mandated.
Right. So how do you...
In this country, unfortunately.
Right. Yes, absolutely. So how do you plan on involving residents in the decision-making process of the city of Fort Worth, District 6, and just in general? Because like you said, voter turnout is extremely low. And like you said, 6,000? That's insane.
It's shameful. It's shameful. One of the things is I hope to engage the community through this campaigning process. The one thing I am recognizing is that it takes a lot of money for that outreach. So I'll be wielding my office authority to show how I am affected at the local level by decisions made at the state and federal level, keeping those lines of communication open, ensuring that I am not a bought candidate. Let me tell you what I mean by that.
Yes.
I will not be accepting donations of any sort from the police or fire department. It's inappropriate.
Mm.
They have my ear just like everybody else will.
Mm.
They have my ear. I'm fully in support of them just like anybody else. At the end of the day, that's inappropriate. It's inappropriate. So I'll be explaining to the residents that I don't have a bias toward anyone, and that when I come or we have issues or things come up, that they can trust me and know there's nothing in it for me by not listening to them, and for the police, there's nothing in it for me not listening to you. That or fire as well. All of them. Any city department, they get picked on the most, but there's other city departments as well, like code enforcement and the like. So using the communications department, having a quarterly update meetings, my goal is to tell my constituents, I don't want you having to go out taking time away from your Tuesday to complain about District 6 down at City Hall, where it's hard to park, got to get out, got to figure out a place to put the kids to go tell me something. You can talk to me prior to that. And then when we go to City Hall as a community, it's to get the other colleagues and the other districts on board so that we can get some votes in order in place so we can get those policies or whatever it is that we do need approved. Mm-hmm. So my goal is let's talk about it before and have action. That's what we're going to do.
Absolutely. I love that. I'm curious what you would say to people. You mentioned that you find it highly inappropriate for people kind of, you know, receiving, taking donations from fire department, police, et cetera. What would you say to people who are like, well, I can't help but those are the people who are choosing to support me? I didn't ask. Why do you find it so inappropriate?
I find the accepting of donations inappropriate. The endorsements are fine.
The endorsements are fine. Okay.
The endorsements are fine. I find the taking of donation because it feels like, you know, quid pro quo to me, it feels that way. So I think I'm okay with the endorsement. And then you just see how they vote down the line or how that particular elected official, you know, utilizes the endorsement. It could be a reason for it. It could be a former police officer.
Right.
That's a, you know what I mean? So I have to look at that case by case, but for sure no on receiving money. I think that's where it gets really kind of hairy.
Absolutely. Tell me a little bit more, because I'm curious. You, in the beginning, you mentioned your Blue Zone project, but tell us a little bit more, because I was super excited to learn more about that.
I would love to. So I spent 5 whole years trying to transform the city and working towards making healthy choices easier for our residents, and that's walking, eating more healthy, and the like. And so, you know, finding your purpose, which hopefully this, you know, folks will see, this is my purpose, is helping people and using policy to support and to make life easier for all of us. Not just, you know, my family, but for everyone, my community. And so I worked closely with South and Southeast Fort Worth, which is funny because I lived in Southwest Fort Worth. And so we created a phenomenal project called the Walking School Bus was an initiative that Blue Zones had all around. But what made it just incredible was in Southeast Fort Worth, we partnered with the YMCA. And we had the Silver Sneakers walk the children of C.C. Moss Elementary to school every Wednesday. We called it WOW, Walking on Wednesday. We worked with the Tarrant County Public Health. We worked with Commissioner Roy Brooks' office. We worked with neighbors, residents, everybody. Everybody got involved. It was awesome. And people would sit on their porch as early as 7 a.m.
Wow.
to see us walk those babies to school. And it was just a really fun thing. And unfortunately, due to COVID,
right,
that will look a little different right now, but I'm very hopeful that it'll go back. We received over $90,000 post Blue Zones project. I did not want to see that program go away. So even though I knew I wasn't going to be staying with the program, I helped partner the YMCA and the school with a federal program to continue to incentivize those older adults to continue to walk with the kids. We have vests and flashlights, and hopefully to increase the frequency of those walks. So that one was very near and dear to my heart. And in fact, as far as South, if I'm councilwoman, I remember my neighbors in Crowley, which I live on that, on the Fort Worth end, and they would say, Tisa, my goodness, we want to do the same thing. And I would be so exhausted from work, my job was to, you know, work on the other side. So it was sad to me that we weren't as active where I live with Blue Zones, but, you know, you have to kind of maintain your peace, if you will.
Right.
So I think as city councilwoman, I'm going to absolutely tap back into that work with Blue Zones Project and ask them, is there a way that we can try to revamp or charge District 6 back up and get us back on purpose, especially after being isolated due to the pandemic? I think the timing would be great get our older adults in senior living facilities and the like to get involved in Blue Zones and to do gardening and all the fun stuff. So absolutely. So that's what I'll do. I'll be leveraging relationship, and that's what makes me a prime candidate, is my experience in leveraging relationships that I've created along my career.
Right. I can, just talking to you, I can feel your passion, how passionate you are about community and how it's at the center of your heart. I love that. So where do we go from here 5 to 10 years from now? What does the future look like if you're elected councilwoman? What are your hopes and dreams for the future?
My hope is, you know, my last name is Leggett, and I was making a joke that I'm the last leg of the race.
I love it.
But that's not entirely true. This is absolutely a marathon. My job is actually to pass the baton. So I'll be looking for someone to run for District 6 and to take some of what we've done and make it better, or if they feel like it needs to be revamped, but get them involved. I think the biggest disservice you can do to a community is stay too long. That's the biggest disservice you can do. So I've got vision that was created not by Tisa Leggett's vision, but by talking to my neighbors and hearing from them what they feel like needs to be rectified. And luckily I have the experience and I can leverage it. So then as I continue my term, if I'm ultimately elected, then we'll determine about how long do I need to stay there. And then also, I gotta be real honest with you, this is not a full-time job. It is theoretically, but city council persons make $24,000 a year. That's why they end up taking money, I think, from other entities. They don't make very much. So they have to have another job. I'm very young in the sense of in the game of professional. I mean, I'm under 40, but I'll be turning 40 soon. And I understand the importance of me creating a life for myself and my family. So I definitely don't want to take away from my purpose as an individual. It is not my goal to take up a spot where I think a bright leader can come in and continue the work. That's not my plan. So 5 to 10 years from now, we're going to have a coalition of community leaders who have the energy and the time to really invest in making the community great. So when you get out of office, it doesn't mean you're still not involved. It just means you're not solely responsible as the face of the community. For $24,000 a year, I don't think that's the expectation. But that's what people who have retirement money or things like that, that can maintain that type of lifestyle. That's where there's a lot of inequity, even in the type of candidates that we get. But if someone like me, who has to have a full-time job that's demanding in order to make the funds it takes to purchase a home or do things, that we can't afford to have that $24,000 a year job. But that's how dedicated that I am to this mission, is to say I'm willing to take the cut. I'll figure it out. But this has to be rectified now. So 5 to 10 years from now, we have a coalition. We're going to have young people. I'm going to get everybody involved in civics and understanding what it takes to morph a community to be successful and great, as we know District 6 and Fort Worth can be.
Absolutely. I love it. So where can people go to learn more about you? And if they have any questions, maybe someone's watching who is a part of District 6, how can they reach you? I have some at the bottom, but if there's any other ways you want to share as well.
Absolutely. If you could please email me at info@Leggett4D6.com. Email me and I'm happy to respond. Or you can go on our website, www.Leggett, L-E-G-G-E-T-T, the number 4, the letter D, the number 6.com. And you can see all of our information, our priorities are listed there. So in more detail, a little bit about me is also, I mean, if you just, you know, want to know, but I definitely have a little bit about me on there. And we just are excited about some of the events that we're doing. I am going to be launching some corner conversations in my district. And so those locations will be posted there as well. So we're going to go old school. We're going to scrappy with this campaign. We want to talk to the people. We want to be able to be accessible to all. Right. And, you know how you see the tax folks who are in tax season and they're dressed up and they're talking on the course. We're going to do street corner the same way. We're going to just talk to folks, get ideas, and encourage them to vote. Even if it's not for me, vote for somebody. Got to get involved.
Absolutely.
Got to get involved.
I agree. Right. I agree. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. You were fantastic. And gosh, you educated us so much. And I know everybody's leaving here saying if they were just kind of going to blow it off, you made it pretty hard for us to just not do that. You made it pretty hard.
Go vote. May 1st.
So thank you so much. We will definitely be following you and keeping up with everything you're doing. And I did want to mention, I saw you had something happening tonight, I think, on Zoom.
Yes.
Can you
share that
with us?
Thank you. If you would like to volunteer with our campaign, please sign up on my website, www.legate4d6.com, and sign up to be a part of our Zoom call tonight. We're going to talk about some of those neat initiatives, out-of-the-box initiatives, to get voters out to not only vote, but hopefully to vote for me, an experienced leader who is ready to move forward and get the ground running. But there's no learning curve with me. We're going to get going as soon as I'm elected, for sure. We're going to get going.
I love that. Thank you so much. And we obviously wish you the best, and we're rooting for you, and we'll be keeping up with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. And have you back anytime. This was fun.
Of course. Yes, we definitely will, especially if you get elected. We definitely will have you back on.
I'll stop by for sure. For sure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Oh, my God, you guys, she was just amazing, fantastic, gold. I just, one word, she is gold. She was so passionate, and she shared so much. So for those of you, even if you don't live in Fort Worth, there's a city council, there's a lot of stuff. I've seen some people in Dallas, no matter where you are. As Yessa said, please go out and vote. It's important. Local government is important. Like she basically told us, you know, a lot of people want to focus on the presidential, but actually it's local government, those elections that are the most important. Again, her information is right down below. You can follow her on Instagram, Facebook, and then we also have her website in the comments under the video, under Madeline Miller, www.legateforDistrict6d6.com. So, you guys, I'm just super excited, and I really do wish her the best. We are coming towards the end of the show, but we have one more special guest. Now, I will say this was a pre-recorded interview. It's Miss Hannah Bacon. She's originally from Brooklyn, New York, and you guys, she is walking 3,000 miles from the Pacific Coast to the Atlantic Coast, for climate change. So her connection, just kind of letting you guys know in advance, the connection was a little bit rough at some spots. As you can imagine, she's been, you know, walking and hiking through rural areas. But I did want to show you guys this interview because I think it's amazing and incredible what she's doing. And so I'm gonna go ahead and add this final interview to the stream. And then, like I said, bear with me, you guys, on the audio. There's a little bit of, you might hear a cracking sound halfway through it at some point in time, but I hope you guys enjoyed the interview.
This is the Jared Nicole Show.
One second, you guys. Okay, let me go ahead and...
Every Tuesday from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Central Time. I'm super excited because we have our final guest for today, Miss Hannah Bacon, and I'm going to go ahead and bring her onto the stream. Hi, Hannah. How are you?
Hi, Jared. I'm good. How are you?
So good. So great to have you on the show. I'm super excited because you've got some big news to share with everybody about the amazing things and inspiring things that you are doing. So I'm just going to go ahead and start the show with you just opening up about yourself and how you got here, and then we'll dive right into the conversation from there.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Of course.
I am in the process of walking across the country for climate action.
Wow.
And I've been at it now for about 3.5 months.
Woo.
Yeah, so I when I started about a week or two, probably 2 weeks before is when I decided to do this. So I never had any plans to do something like this before. Yeah, I've been in the environmental world career-wise for a few years now, and I lost my job in the pandemic, so I found myself with a lot of extra time.
Right.
And a few other circumstances, including a flight that I realized was totally not essential. Just kind of having this extra time led me to think about my carbon footprint and ways that I could improve. So I did some quick planning and got it all together, and I'm about halfway through the walk.
That's incredible. So just so I can clarify, so viewers know, how long do you think it'll take for you to walk across the entire country?
I'm looking at about 7 months.
Wow.
I had thought 6, but I'm allowing myself some more off days. Like today I took an off day, so that's definitely necessary for my body and my mind.
Right. Right. Tell me a little bit about your journey thus far. What first inspired you or led you to become an environmentalist? Was it something when you were a little girl, you always were interested and cared about the environment, or was it something more specific?
Yeah, I think just on a personal level, from when I was really young, I loved spending time outside. My sister and I spent so much time outside, and my parents are really huge environmentalists, so they love bird watching and hiking and camping. So as a family, we all spent a lot of time outdoors, and we spent a lot of time just appreciating environmental life and different species. I've just always had that love and appreciation for the environment. And then in a more career-oriented way, when I was a few years out of college, I started working at an outdoor science school in California. So for that, we taught kids outside in the Redwoods in Santa Cruz, California, teaching environmental science and stewardship. So that was kind of when it transitioned from just a love on a personal level to a professional side.
Right. That's absolutely incredible. So tell us, what is your day today? If you can kind of walk us through and paint a picture of it, is it you just wake up and you're I'm headed for Oklahoma today? Or how do you organize? What is your day to day like?
Yeah. So, it's kind of a big plan of what the whole trip is going to look like and my route. But usually the night before, I'll get an idea of where I'm going the next day. And I wake up most of the time I'm camping, although for the past few weeks, because of weather and, high winds and the snowstorms that happen in Texas, I've been either in motels a lot more often or staying with friends of friends and such. So either way, I wake up really early, probably between 6 and 7. And if I'm in my tent, I just pack up. If I'm staying inside, pack up my belongings, which is a lot easier because I don't have to pack up a tent. And then I pretty much just hike from anywhere between 7 and 8 until 4-ish, which can be anywhere from 18 to 30 miles. I would say average in the 25-ish range. So yeah, pretty much I'm just kind of trucking along all day. And then, at night I cook some camping food and set up my tent and do it all over again.
Wow. It's so inspiring. Yet I know there are people, maybe family or friends or people who are you and concerned, maybe concerned. Have you had any fears since just kind of going along this journey, or any kind of bad experience?
experiences so far in terms of staking? Because I know people probably see you, a young woman, by yourself just hiking miles and miles on end, and people might be like, what? I understand she's passionate about climate change, but, you know, is this safe? So what would you tell the people, what would you say to them who are questioning and saying, there's so many ways that you can, you know, spread awareness about climate change, you know, and be an advocate for climate action. Why walk across the 50 states just to do this?
Yeah, well, I think for me, you know, like you said, there's so many ways that we can be climate activists, and there's so many ways to make change. But for me, as someone, I love hiking. I love the outdoors. Mm-hmm. I like adventure, and I had the time. So I really like to take the time in life that I have, because I know that, you know, we're not always going to have the time to do adventures and do this sort of thing. So for me, it just kind of, it came into my head, and I was like, yeah, this is an adventure I want to do. And of course, it's something I'm passionate about. But in terms of safety, you know, of course, there's a million things that you think about and worry about. But I have found that people are just so kind and generous. Mm. And I have been, maybe knock on wood, but I've been incredibly lucky with the folks that I've met. And of course, you know, there's things that come up, but I feel like I'm pretty prepared, and I only hike during the daylight. I have a GPS tracker that's on my backpack at all times. My family's tracking me. So there's certain safety precautions that I take.
Right.
But I think just overall, I enjoy the adventure of it, and I've been really lucky to meet incredible people along the way.
That's amazing. So what is it about climate change? Why is climate change so important to you?
Climate change is so incredibly important to me because it's here now, and it's affecting all of us, and it's projected to get worse. The effects of climate change are projected to get worse. So kind of like I was talking about, just my love for nature and the outdoors, that is where it started, but I think over the past few years especially, I've realized how climate change is affecting our communities across the globe, but across the U.S. more and more. And so many people are living without clean air, without clean water, experiencing drought, which is something that I felt walking through the Southwest.
Wow.
Who said farmers, who said they would have to sell all their cattle if it didn't rain. So just kind of seeing how climate is affecting each of our lives. With the wildfires of 2020 that totally ravaged the West Coast, they were the worst on record. 2020 was tied for the hottest year. Tied was 2016. And 8 of our 10 hottest years ever recorded on Earth were in the past decade. So, yeah, it's important to me because I care about our Earth, and I care about people. And I have two nieces that are under the age of 5. And I'm really concerned for them and young folks who are going to have to live with all the choices that we and our parents and grandparents made.
Right. Absolutely. So what would you say, because there's a lot of people who are like, climate change, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't exist. It's not happening. It's just the government trying to, you know, come up with all these regulations. What would you say to those people who don't believe climate change is real?
Well, I would say that at this point, because we do have so much science, we're really lucky to live in a time when we have so much science and technology that can prove that climate change is real. So it's really not an argument of whether or not it is real. It's more an argument of how are we going to plan and prepare for it. So that maybe don't believe or don't like to think about climate change, I would suggest there's a bunch of resources that you can read up on. NASA has great resources. IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change. And to just look at the world around you. And I found that most of the people I have met, whether, you know, what side they're on politically, or even if they're not very political, they all want the same thing. Everyone wants clean water for their kids and clean air for their kids, and they want to be able to grow their cattle, raise their cattle, and grow their food. And so I think that we all generally want the same thing. It has just become really muddled in terms of how we're going to get there.
That's a really great point. And I love how you did address, you know, it doesn't matter what side of the party you're on. One thing everybody can do is they do want clean water. They, you know, there's some things that people just, you know, like you said, it's not a matter of just saying, okay, is it real or is it not? But there are things essentially we all want for each other, for our families, for our friends, just for, yeah, just for the country as a whole. So that's a really, really key and valuable point that you just, made with that. So tell us a little bit about, you're a part of the Sunrise Movement, which is a fabulous organization. Tell us a little bit more about the Sunrise Movement.
Yeah, so the Sunrise Movement is a great organization that I'm not particularly involved with officially. I just support them. And
gotcha.
I've been following, you know, what they do, what they've been doing over the past few years. So when I decided to do this and decided to use it as a fundraising opportunity, I chose Sunrise because they are youth-led. They are prioritizing a Green New Deal, which I strongly support, which is a move towards renewable energy and creates jobs in the process. And they also are ensuring that folks in the frontline community, so people who are most exposed to the effects of climate change, have a voice in the fight against the effects of climate change. So yeah, they're a great organization, and with this walk, we raise and all goes directly to Sunrise.
Oh, that's great. I love that. I absolutely love that. So going back to, you know, kind of the people who may be, let's say, not against climate change necessarily, but just kind of not the biggest fans of it, and they argue that, you know, government regulations will hurt the U.S. economy. What would you say to those people? Do you see where they're coming from? Would you say it's kind of just a way for people to disguise and, you know, not end up, per se, not end up going along with what they know is right? Or what would you say to those people?
I think definitely I see where they're coming from, because it's a change. So any sort of change can be scary, and I think that we don't, it's a lot of unknown. So I understand when people have reservations about climate change and working towards climate change affecting the economy, but actually we work towards a Green New Deal. It's going to, similar to FDR's New Deal after the Great Depression, it will provide tons of new jobs. It's just a shift. So moving away from fossil fuels and towards renewable energy. So, you know, providing renewable energy to our cities, planning for the effects of climate change, making sure our buildings have renewable energy sources, making sure we're ready to fight against these climate emergencies, like the snowstorms in Texas, like the fires, like, you know, floodings in the southeast and hurricanes. So these, what we used to call natural disasters that are now becoming more and more prevalent, so now we're linking to climate change. We need to prepare for that. And there's a lot of new jobs that are possible and a lot of new work available. So planning for climate change and preparing can actually create a lot of new jobs, and that's something that will be part of the Green New Deal. I think it's that.
Right. Yes. Fingers crossed that it does. What are some of the smaller ways that people can, you know,
the climate change. They don't want to necessarily, hike across the country, for instance. So there's a lot of ways that people can get involved that you can suggest and share with viewers.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many ways, smaller scale, that you can fight climate change every single day. Just driving and flying less, if possible. Mm-hmm. So many people have to drive to get to work, but there's ways every single day, limiting the amount of time to go to the store, limiting travel that's essential. Those are really great ways to start, biking, taking public transportation, and if you have those options available. You can always vote for politicians leaders who are going to prioritize climate action, because that we have so much power in that voice. So on a local, national level, always voting is really important. Shopping locally is something that is huge. Trying to support local businesses, because that limits the amount of travel that your goods got, to get to you. When you're shopping local, there's less packaging because you're not buying online, or food is maybe coming from your local community if that's something that you have available to you. Eating less meat. I'm not suggesting that everyone goes out and becomes vegan right this second, but if you eat meat every day, trying to look at your week and say, maybe I could limit my red meat, especially consumption, on this day. So making lifestyle changes like that, buying less plastic. Plastic is a huge contributor to climate change. It takes a ton of oil just to produce a plastic water bottle, and not a ton in scientific sense, but it takes a lot of oil to produce that, and it takes a lot of water to produce oil, to produce plastic. So buying less material things in general. Those are all really good ways to reduce your carbon footprint.
Those are some great suggestions. Really good things about, one of the good ones that you said was driving and flying less, because, if you need to not only go to the grocery store, just go to the store, you don't really plan, right at that moment, you might be I need to go, right, I'm out of water bottles or something, and you go and get water bottles, or I need to go get gas instead of thinking of, let me, do it all in one kind of commute. There's just, a lot of times we're not thinking about that. And those are some really great suggestions. Also, what is it like doing this? Because we're still in a pandemic. Yes, people are getting vaccines, and things are getting a little bit better, but we're also in a pandemic. And I does that frighten you? Just even people that you meet that you don't know, coming up to you? I just, what a time to be doing this for you. What are your thoughts about that?
That was something that I was more concerned about it going into it, but when it started, I realized just how much time I spend by myself and how much time I'm outdoors. So like I said earlier, in the past couple of weeks, because of weather, I've been more indoors, but generally I am alone for days, and I'm outside. So when I meet people, usually I meet them out on the street and outside open air. If I'm going through a populated area, I wear a mask, and oftentimes other people will be, which is good. I wish it was more, but, if I stay at someone's home, we have the discussion of, have you been vaccinated?
Okay.
I can wear a mask inside. I can camp in your backyard. So it's things that I'll figure out on a basis of what a family is comfortable with and what I'm comfortable with. So I think that going into it, I was really concerned, but just seeing how much time I spend by myself and outside, I think I'm actually so incredibly lucky to be in this place right now, being able to experience the world kind of in the open air.
Right. That's amazing. It's incredible. So a couple of fun questions for you. So what states, are there any that you just super excited. You can't wait to set the decision where this state is going, particularly for something, anything like that that you're excited about or looking forward to?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's really, I feel, like, excited about something every day. And usually it's something that I could be coming. I posted about this on my Instagram, but I met this course. Completely, like, changed my world because we had a connection, which might sound silly, but just, like, when you're outside on the road every day, there's something beautiful that happens pretty much every day. And in that moment, I become really excited about whatever it is. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the rest of Oklahoma. This is the only state out of all of them that I've never been to before. So it's been a wonderful experience.
Wow.
Yeah, so the other states, some of them I had just, like, driven through or been to briefly, this is the first one I had never set foot in, so it's been cool to experience it on the ground. I'm looking forward to kind of, like, the eastern part of Tennessee and some parts of Virginia, just because it'll be more familiar, and
right.
I think I know a lot more people out that way. So some more friends of friends, just being from the East Coast, it'll have that sense of familiarity.
Right. No, I think that's going to be great. So your family and your close friends, are they like, woohoo, yay? Or they're just like, Hannah, please, like, trying to call you and message you? Because I know this message all the time. This is the greatest. So I could only imagine if I was in love or maybe the sister or brother, them being like, I'm here today, like, is she okay?
Yeah, they're a mix. Overall, my close friends and family are just excited and proud. But yeah, they get nervous. I try to talk to my mom or my stepdad every day.
Good.
Let them know where I'm at. So I have that connection. If I have good service, I'll call some of my friends and just those help have time. So mostly they're like, yay. They get worried.
Of course, yeah, of course. So after Oklahoma, what is the next state that you're headed to?
I don't really know yet. Just trying to take it one day at a time.
And, right.
I want to stay in the environmental world, but I think right now it's hard for me to
see on
this. I like to, wherever I'm living, do environmental work that's kind of specific to that area, generally. That's what I've done in the past. So I don't know exactly where I'm going to be living yet, and I think that's part of it. It's hard for me to, like, plan and think about what I'll be doing, but immediately when I just want to spend some time with my nieces and family friends.
Right. Yeah. So where do we go, Hannah? 5-10 years from now, what do you see yourself doing?
What's that?
I said 5-10 years from now, where do we go from here, Hannah? What do you see yourself doing? After you completed this, you see yourself.
I'm not sure. Hopefully still in the climate world. Doing the same thing. Hopefully not the same thing in terms of walking across the country, but hopefully I won't still be walking then. But in terms of just talking to people and helping them realize it's important and that we can all make a difference.
Right, absolutely. And finally, what is the one thing that you want everyone to understand? Just if they're watching this, if they're telling your account on Instagram, and just they're like, why is she doing that? What is the one thing you want people to take away from your story and the reason behind why you're doing this?
Definitely that you can make a difference. I know that climate change can be feel like a really huge issue, because it is, but I want people to take away the sentiment of that you are important and that your actions are important.
Absolutely.
And it's important for you right now. It's important for, you know, your kids, our kids, our future generations, and that every action we take has an effect. So just remember that you have the power, and instead of letting it become overwhelming, leading to apathy, let it be inspiring in remembering that you can make a difference with your everyday actions.
I love that. I love that. Well, thank you so much for that, for coming on the show and talking to us. Keep doing what you're doing. You will definitely, you're keeping up with what you're doing. We love to have you back on the show so you can just update us how, you know, how the journey is still going. And send you guys your information is at the bottom with the GoFundMe, the Instagram, and then the website, for climate.org. And if you have any questions for Hannah, you can reach out to her and she'd be more than happy to hear from you guys. So Hannah, please stay safe. please stay safe and keep doing what you're doing. And we can talk again.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you. Bye. Alrighty, you guys. I just had a great interview. There was a little bit of sound problems, but for the majority of the time, we could hear her great. Hannah's so inspiring. I actually, just a little background, I was just reading about climate change, and I just Googled the hashtag, IG'd the hashtag, and then her account popped up, and I was like, what? This is amazing what she's doing. So I reached out to her, and I just had to get her on the show. So there's so many great takeaways that we can take from Hannah, and I just want to encourage you guys, just like Hannah said, there's so many things and ways you can make a difference. And even if you think it's not grand, or like she said, you don't understand the whole scope and realm of climate change, she gave us so many great ideas. You can cut back on plastic. If you love meat, eat less, red beets, and you know, you don't have to worry about trying to fly and drive on several different trips, you know, cut back. So there's so many great things that you can do. And again, you guys, her information is still on the screen right below. Hannah Bacon, her IG is at Miles for Climate, her GoFundMe.com/miles4climate, goodness. And then her website, milesforclimate.org, to learn more about Hannah. So that concludes the show for today, you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I will see you back here next Tuesday, as always. Guys, and that concluded that interview for today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to today's show. I had three incredible guests. If you're just now tuning in, I'm sorry, but we are at the conclusion of the show. But don't worry, because like I just said, I am here every Tuesday from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Central Time. And you can always watch the show if you missed it after on our Facebook page. You can go to Texas Metro News, our Facebook page, or you can go to my personal Facebook page to
watch the show if you missed out on anything. And like I said, if you want to be a guest on the show, I would love to have you. I'm always actively looking for future guests for the Jaira Nicole Show, and I love to hear from everyday and ordinary people just like you and the amazing things that you are doing or that you're passionate about or that you're advocating for. Love to have you on this show. So again, you guys, thank you so much for tuning in. I enjoyed it. It's always a pleasure, and I will see you back again next week.